Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 645 Pod. This is a podcast to help you follow Jesus, particularly for the 645 community, but for everyone else listening as well. Good to have you along. I am Anton, and I'm the minister for 645 at Christchurch.
And I am Simon. I'm Anton's apprentice, and I also look after 645 as well.
Cool. And welcome back to Season 2, where we are looking at living for God.
Yeah, this is our last regular episode of the season, our final topic.
Yep.
We've gone through 10 topics.
That's good.
And two seasons nearly.
Very nearly, yes. Good use of regular as opposed to final.
Thank you. I feel like I wouldn't want to annoy you with
that. Yep, appreciate it. For our final regular episode, we're going to be looking at money.
Mm.
Yes. Let's talk about what we don't normally talk about.
Yeah. Get into the awkward.
Look, that's what we're all about.
Okay, well, we are talking about money today,
mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is something that's super important to think about and talk about as Christians particularly, but also something that we generally find a little bit awkward to talk about as a society.
Mm-hmm.
I think I feel less awkward talking about money. I ran my own business for 2 years, so I kind of really got forced into the being awkward, asking for people for money and dealing with money. And now I'm a bit like, oh, I don't find this so awkward to talk about. But
well, that's good.
If you haven't owned your own small business and had to deal with money a lot, it's generally something that's a little bit awkward to talk about and we don't really want to talk about much.
Yeah, it's hard to talk about it with other people as well because there's lots of feelings wrapped up with money because it's so significant in our lives.
Really. It's like it's super personal. You know, we kind of sometimes think the amount of money we have might reflect our own value or our worth might be in money. And you also feel awkward talking about it because what if the other person really doesn't have anything much and you're like, I've got some savings and then you feel really awkward having these discussions.
Yep. Or will they think that, I'm too greedy or too materialistic?
Yep. You know? Avoiding all my money if I have savings.
Yep.
There's a lot of potential awkwardness, especially for people who maybe are a little bit of an overthinker.
For everyone in society in general, I think there's two big feelings and then a bonus one if you're Christian. One is, we talked about kind of the fear, anxiety around money, like not wanting to let it dominate you or define you. Mm. So there can be, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to deal with it.
It's private, personal.
Yeah.
I'll keep it in its little closed box of my bank account.
But then there's the feeling of strong desire for money too and the kind of almost the lust for more. Partly money itself, because with money comes status in society.
Mm.
But obviously with all that money can buy as well in terms of fun and toys and security.
Yeah.
So we have that strong desire for it.
Yeah. And I guess it's a bit weird because it's not like an object that you just desire that you don't necessarily need or don't need. Money is kind of a bit of an essential thing that you have to have to operate in our society. It's really hard to not have money. So it's like it's both completely functional but also there's so many other aspects to it. Like we need money to have things, be able to buy food, be able to pay rent or buy houses.
That's a function of money. It's, money's just it used to be silver and gold and notes, but now it's, electronic numbers on a bank app. You know?
Which is a whole weird thing to get into when I think about it sometimes. Yeah. Like, how does what this have money? Value?
But obviously society gives it the value.
Yeah.
That's what it functions in, that you can use money to exchange for goods and services, as Simon Simpson would say. So it's totally functional.
Yeah.
But there's that great desire.
Yeah, also functional and a luxury,
I guess. Right. But the bonus.
Yeah, bonus Christian feeling.
Bonus Christian feeling with money is, can you guess what it is? What's in my head? Guess
guilt.
Guilt,
yay.
Yes. Because we go, all right, I know I'm called not to be greedy.
Mm.
I know I'm meant to give money away.
Yeah.
But can I use it for myself, or is the new computer I just bought really ungodly?
Should I feel bad about spending money on that holiday?
Yeah, that's right. How much should I give away? You know, am I like, there's just
a lot of questions.
It's a lot of questions, and we're going to deal with every single one of them.
Wow. Strap in. This is going to be 3 hours long.
No, hopefully we'll see from the Bible some of the, what God thinks about money and how we can live for him using our money to his glory.
And that will hopefully give us some principles to kind of have as overarching ideas to answer some of those questions, even if we don't necessarily answer every single one of those questions that you might have about Christianity. money.
and that's because, in a lot of these topics, there are some clear instructions from the Lord, from the Bible.
Mm.
But a lot of it comes down to your heart and your mind. So your desire for God and your wisdom that God gives you and how you live it out. So. Yeah.
Which in some ways makes everything so much more complicated. I almost want there to just be a rule that says, do this, don't do this. But actually God gives us the freedom to work out what it looks like for us to follow him faithfully, which is wonderful and intimidating.
That's right. Yeah, it's a wonderful freedom that God gives us to express our devotion to him in creative ways.
Mm.
So it's not, as much as we love you, oh God, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
We also don't really like being told what to do.
When we're told what to do, we hate it. So.
But the consequence of that is we actually need to gain wisdom from God's word, and then we need the heart to enact that wisdom in order to please God.
So what are maybe a couple of some of the problems that we initially have about money? I feel like sometimes as Christians, we can just have the vibe that money is evil. All money is evil. Mm. Maybe people misquote that verse, like for money is the root of all kinds of evil. They just kind of go,
money is evil. Yeah.
But I feel like that's not the case that we get from scripture. But we also get the idea that there are problems and dangers with money. So how do we balance that? It's not inherently evil, but also there are warnings in the Bible.
Yeah, I think it comes down to money is good. Like it's a means of sharing, really. Mm. So, if you bake food and I'm doing accountancy, I can...
can you help me with my tax?
I can, it could be a one-to-one swap. You give me baked goods for my tax help. Or you go, okay, I'll pay you this much for your baked goods and you pay me this much for my accountancy help. And we kind of share our resources. So it's money is not evil in and of itself.
Mm.
The problem is the people who have the money.
Yeah.
We're all evil within ourselves. By nature,
surprise.
We're
fallen.
So the verse in 1 Timothy 6, verse 10 says, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil.
Mm.
And so it's all about our love and desire for money. That's what creates all the problems.
Mm.
And particularly in 1 Timothy 6, it says, some people, it's all about people, eager for money, there's the greed, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs.
Mm.
And that's a really striking way of phrasing it. So pierce themselves, it's actually a self-harm to be eager for more money. It's not good for you.
Yeah, it's self-destructive.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll get into why in a little bit, but that's just a really striking way of the Apostle Paul phrases what happens, because you can lose your faith over the love of money.
Mm. Are there any other dangers that we see in the Bible? So having an inordinate desire for money, lusting after money, is one of the big ones. But are there any other dangers that we see?
Well, I think the big danger is it threatens our worship of God.
Mm.
So Jesus will say that no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other. So our hearts are only big enough for one master in life.
Yeah.
But he concludes with, you cannot serve both God and money.
Mm.
And we'd love to think, oh, can I just serve money a little bit? But no, you can't. You've actually got to, your worship, what you devote your life to, or might be to money, but if it's to money, it won't be to Jesus.
Mm. And I think you can kind of see there are many ways in which those things will just directly contradict themselves. As we look further into the idea of God and money, like it becomes more and more evident that that is very true what Jesus says. It's not something you can vaguely do both of, because actually loving money will lead you to compromise on Jesus, or loving Jesus and putting him first will transform the way you deal with money and will make you a little bit unable to want to hoard money because you're serving someone else. And so it really works out practically.
That's right, because money reveals what you think life is about.
Mm.
So if you think life is all about possessions and lifestyle and pleasure and security and power and influence, if they're the things that you, if that's what the goal of life is all about, then of course you're going to worship money, because money can get you all those things in this life. Whereas if you actually think life is about being made in the image of God and living to please him and living a life of sacrificial love to other people, then you'll use your money very differently and you'll view your money very differently.
Mm.
I think what money does, why it's so dangerous, is it's two big lies from money.
Mm.
And one is that money offers us life now.
Mm.
So all those pleasures, all the fun, all the status, that's, you know, those things are, you know, that's the call of money, saying, hey, yeah, come and earn me and I will give you all these things.
Yeah, this glamorous life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's funny for me reflecting on this, that wasn't my big temptation.
Mm.
So Katie and I, we've gone through a Marie Kondo kind of culling phase of life.
Yeah.
And it's really transformed the way I think about spending, because if Katie and I are so keen on having few things in the house and having only things that we value in the house, I've actually got to think hard about what I bring into the house. Like if I buy something, it's got to have a place and a purpose.
Yeah.
And so that's actually transformed the way I think of my spending. So that's been helpful. Mm. But the second lie is probably more my danger, and it's that money offers security for the future. We think, oh, if we have money, then whatever happens,
We're safe.
We're safe. You know, whatever illness comes, well, I can just throw money at it and get the best treatment I can. Or whatever, you know, if a natural disaster happens, then I can just buy a different, or rebuild the house or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we've seen from coronavirus, who expected this, and it's had a massive financial impact on so many people.
Mm.
And so people who thought they were secure financially just aren't anymore.
Mm.
And so if you've put your hope in that, in money for that security, then you're going to be really disappointed.
Mm. Yeah. So it can either buy us a sense of comfort and pleasure now, and we can pursue it for the pleasure, or we can pursue it for the feeling of control and safety that money can give us.
Yep.
They're kind of our two big problems that we can have.
Yeah, that's right. There's a great quote from a really helpful little book called Money Counts by Graham Bainon. And he says that money God, so worshipping God, money God cannot deliver on its promises.
Mm.
It cannot give us fun or good relationships. You know, this is kind of ultimately. It cannot secure our health or happiness. It cannot ward off anxiety or fear. It cannot comfort us or wipe away our tears. It cannot control the future. It cannot guarantee anything to us.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a real hollow false God.
Yeah.
You kind of think it can do all those things, but it just really can't.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it struck me when I went to Fiji, not the tourist section, but the, you know, I went to a little village with a church trip, and they were such happy people.
Mm.
They had very, very little in terms of money or possessions. And I thought, wow, if someone got sick, that's just so hard. But they had everything they needed. They had shelter, they had a community, they had food, they had friendship, they had work.
Mm.
And so it's like, wow, you really, you know, having lots of money is actually not essential to living a godly life and B, a fulfilling life.
Yeah. And in fact, it can, more than being not essential, can actually be unhelpful for those things.
That's
the
right.
more money you have, the less content you can be, or the harder it is to be godly with your money, because it can call to you in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of dangers about money, and there are big two: is pleasure now, security for the future.
Yep.
I'm kind of wanting to hoard money for those reasons.
Oh, and just before we go there, it's just, so it's not just because it doesn't deliver on those things, it's not just wrong to love money.
Mm.
It's just dumb to do it.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing for your life.
Yeah.
It's, you know, instead we're to love God who gives life in all contexts.
Yeah.
So it's a silly thing to do, but it's just so prevalent in our society that it's a natural thing to want.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're saying.
Yeah. Well, so there's lots of dangers. They're silly dangers when you kind of expose them, but they are real and prevalent, and most of us will struggle with one of those two big dangers at some point in our lives. So what then does it look like for us to live for God with money? So we can't escape it. We can't just not have any money, because that will make life pretty difficult. Some people try it. But how do we live for God with money? What are some principles? What are the ways we think about it? Maybe we can chat about some of the questions we have about how to live with God and money.
Well, I think some of the three things that we need to think about is, what place does it have in our heart? How we should think about it in terms of ourselves, and then how we should, what we should do in terms of being generous.
Mm.
So the first of those things is thinking about the place money has in our heart.
Mm.
And so, you know, we've talked a little bit about that in terms of wanting to, are you pursuing money and that, and all that money can buy? That is that your view of life, or are you pursuing God and pleasing Him?
Mm.
So the first thing is to do is look at your heart. Mm. But then I guess, you know, let's get to some practical things about how we do it. That's what we're here for. In terms of money for ourselves and for our responsibilities, there's a couple of verses that are helpful in terms of, okay, we've actually got some responsibilities with money.
Yeah.
First is to ourselves. So 1 Thessalonians 4, 11 and 12 says, make it your ambition to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders and so that you will not be dependent on anybody.
Mm.
So there's an encouragement to work and earn money so that
you can support yourself.
You can support yourself. You know, that's a godly thing to do.
Mm.
And there may be times where you're unemployed or you'll need, or you're sick and you'll need financial help from others. That's fine. But, you know, as it depends on you.
Yeah. As much as possible.
Yep.
And then, you know, it continues then. We've got a responsibility to provide for ourselves, but also to those who might be dependent on us. So we've got a responsibility to provide for our families. 1 Timothy 5:8. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So that's a pretty savage verse. So we've got that responsibility to use that money to care for and support those who depend on us. And that's a good and godly thing to use that money to love and care for, especially those in your house.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So we need to exercise our responsibilities in terms of providing for ourselves and providing for those who are dependent on us. So having enough money to do that is really important.
Mm.
Now, if you grow up, you know, if you have children, you know, is it the best thing for you to, like, as a parent, you kind of go, oh, I want my child to have every opportunity, you know, I want them to go skiing every year and go to Europe and have, you know, expensive school education, you know, things like that. But again, if that's your primary view of how to provide for your children, then you're providing for them a view of life that is money-centered.
Mm.
You know, it's that other view of life opposed to God, that life is all about these things as opposed to living a godly life, which may mean spending less on your children, and that may be a good thing.
Yeah. So you provide for them, but make sure that you are being godly in how you are an example, especially to your children, in how you provide for them.
Yeah. So let's have a think about how do you be godly in terms of using your money.
Mm.
I think where a lot of the guilt comes in is we forget that God gives us everything, including our wealth.
Yeah.
We're to use it for His glory, but partly for His glory is using money for our enjoyment or to appreciate the things that God has given us.
Mm.
So there's this great, so in the book I mentioned before, there's this great analogy of, well, say your parents give you some money for you and your friends to go on a holiday.
Mm.
So, you know, you get this some money, you book flights, off you go. So how do you honor your parents with that money?
Yeah.
Well, they want you to enjoy the holiday. They want you to have a good time. They want you to go and see nature or go and have fun experiences. You know, they'd love it if you shared that money with your friends and, you know, paid for dinner and stuff, you know. Same with God. God's given us all things for our enjoyment if we are thankful to Him.
Yeah.
And so there is actually nothing wrong with spending money for our own enjoyment.
Mm.
There's obviously a limit to that, which we'll get to in a little bit in terms of being generous. But that's something to keep in mind, that, you know, it's not necessarily wrong to have that nice meal.
And I think that everything coming from God is a really helpful principle for us to think about and stop and think, you know, are we being a good steward of what God has given us? This is kind of, you know, it's not really ours to cling to.
Mm.
This is God's that He's given us on loan, and that's really helpful to think about in money.
Yeah. And so the Puritans, for example, spoke about moderation.
Mm.
You know, we think about alcohol in moderation, but not much else. What about moderation? You know, not denying the goodness of all that money can buy. They're actually God-given gifts, as you say. Mm. But knowing that we can so easily get entangled by our love of money, then we limit what we spend our money on. We limit the things that we can buy so that we don't get all that we can buy.
Yeah.
But instead, we've got plenty of room to be generous.
Mm. Yeah. And so speaking of being generous, that's a little bit of the flip side. And I think also something that can be quite fraught as Christians in terms of thinking about what it looks like for us to be generous. What does generosity look like? How should we think about those things? And, you know, we've got some misconceptions there that we can have as well. So how do we, as godly people, think about generosity and money?
The first thing that I discovered in looking at this, in 2 Corinthians 8, I think it's verse 7, Paul says to the Corinthian church, who have been great at giving money to other people for their good, he says, "But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we've kindled in you," so they're going great as Christians,
yeah,
"see that you also excel in this grace of giving." So two things there. One is it's giving, being generous, is an essential part of the Christian life. We need to be being generous financially as we live for God.
But it's because God has been generous to us.
Totally.
It's a reflection
of that. Yep. It's a response of the generosity of God in the gospel of Jesus, for sure. But it says in this grace of giving. And so grace, of course, means undeserved gift. Who's given this gift? It's actually God. So if we are generous, that's God's gift to us.
Yeah.
He doesn't just gift us the money, but he gives us the heart to be generous with it.
And so generosity really matters. It matters to God. God is, it's almost like spiritual gifts we were talking about last season. It's a gift that God gives us because, you know, we would naturally want to hoard money and hold on to it and all those dangers and problems. And so God can help us to be actually generous and giving away what he's given us in the first place.
Yeah. So, you know, eagerly desire the grace of giving, I would say.
Yeah.
What that looks like in practice. A lot of people talk about tithing.
So tithing, I guess that's an Old Testament principle. Part of the law was giving away a percentage of what you earn to God as an act of service to him. It's traditionally a 10% of what you earn. And, you know, some Christians are really big on that's what you should do now. Some Christians are really anti-tithing and saying this not helpful. How should we think about that and that principle, and what does that actually show us?
Yeah, so with any Old Testament law, we've got to see how to express that this side of Jesus. And what happens is, okay, the tithing law isn't mandated for Christians. You know, the tithe was particularly for the Levites and their practice of worship for the community. We don't have the Levitical system anymore, so you know, Jesus fulfilled that. So in terms of it being a law, it's no longer a law. You don't have to tithe.
Yeah.
But we see in the New Testament that God loves a cheerful giver. And so instead of it being a requirement, you know, what must I give? It should now be a desire. What can I give? So that's how it's changed. But also the law does give us wisdom in terms of how to live that out now. And so in terms of it was 10% for Israel, so for God and his people then, that seemed like a reasonable proportion that God's people could give away and still live normally and, you know, enjoy the things that God offers. So I take the approach that, well, if that was the approach in the Old Testament, if I can, I should at least give 10% of my income. You know, the Pharisees who didn't love Jesus, they gave 10%.
Yeah.
How much more if I love Jesus and seeing how much he's given to me, should I be generous to do that? So that's how I think about that 10% going, I should at least be giving 10%.
Yeah.
Now, there'll be times, of course, when you can't do that.
Yeah.
Or there'll be times when 10% actually isn't that much, you know, if you're earning a lot. But, you know, it's quite like I compare myself to my brother who's not a Christian.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he doesn't give anywhere near 10% of his income to anything, but I'm going, wow, he must have so much more money than I do because he hasn't been giving lots away. Now, he could be giving to charity, I think, assuming that, like, but then it's like, oh, no, hang on, that's me getting wrapped up into money equals life.
Yeah.
And so I've got to guard against that.
Yeah, and so it's a generous spirit that we should be having our money with. You know, we recognize that it's God's and God's given it to us, and so we should be wanting to be generous with that and wanting to reflect God's generosity in how we are generous to other people.
Yeah, and particularly for God's people, there are two things, two areas that we should be generous in. One is to those who are needy. There's lots of examples in the Bible where Jesus and the apostles encourages us giving to those who are poor in particular, particularly poor within the body of believers, but also doing good outside the body of believers as well. So, you know, at Christchurch, we don't have, because of the area of Sydney we're in, we don't have too many people who are financially needy or without financial resources. So I look elsewhere to see, okay, who can I be generous to who are needy, whether it be sponsor kids or aid relief or things like that. And the second area that Christians should be generous to is the work of the Lord.
Yeah.
No, not many non-Christians are going to give to the work of the Lord. So it's, but particularly if we want to use our money for the glory of God, what greater honor can there be than to invest our money in things that will work towards eternity? So for me, you know, to give, you know, for, I give 10% of what I earn to Christchurch Knives because this is a place where God has put me and put all of, put us to work for God's kingdom and to build a lot of disciples. And so I want to invest not just my time and for me, my vocation, but also my money into this ministry. As well as I'll give and you know, as Christchurch, we give 11% of our of all the money that comes in away to gospel work elsewhere.
Yeah.
So whether it be missionaries in Africa or Asia or Southwest Sydney, it's kingdom work here in St. Ives and kingdom work elsewhere.
Yeah.
And so I know not everyone's in a, you know, has a regular wage necessarily or a salary, but if but even when you, you know, get your first job at Macca's or you get your first full-time job, that's the time to start being generous.
Yeah.
Because your heart will so easily be captured in, oh, I have all this money and I'll...
Yeah.
You
know. Or you can think, you know, I'm only earning a little bit. I'll be generous when I'm actually earning more. Yeah. But that just doesn't work like that. If you don't start being like generous, it's just going to keep getting worse.
Yeah.
And so another thing about generosity and a principle that I hear from some people, this idea that people say, I'm going to go and I'm going to work and I'm going to earn as much money as I can so I can give away money. What do you think about that? That idea that people sometimes have.
I think it's wonderful and dangerous at the same time. Because of the danger of money and the lure of money. You know, if you do strive to earn as much as you can, A, you may be tempted to earn it in an ungodly way or, you know, work too hard for this, you know, and neglect your family and ministry and things like that.
Yeah.
And of course, you could be tempted by all that money offers when you start earning the big bucks.
Yeah.
But it's also a wonderful thing because so many gospel ministries have been funded by amazing gospel patrons who have been generous and allowed wonderful ministry to occur so that people enter the kingdom of God by the gospel being preached. And so maybe if that's you, what would be good is decide in your heart, okay, what is an appropriate standard of living for someone who, for me, who follows Jesus? You know, what area am I going to live in? How much rent or mortgage payments am I going to commit to that? And later on, things like schooling for kids and standard of clothing, you know, decide on that first and then keep to that standard, even if your income doubles or triples. And so then that's when you actually are living out the that desire of earning lots so I can give lots away. You actually need to give lots away to honor that commitment.
It can be an easy slippery slope. You've got to be really careful with your heart when you are aiming to earn money, even to do something generous with it, because it is can be so tempting and beckoning.
Yep. And so have a look at how you're going. You know, the best indicator of future performance is present performance. Yeah. And so how much are you giving away now? Are you being really generous now with the smaller amount that you're earning?
Yeah.
That's if you're not doing that now, then I reckon
that's
not
a dangerous thing to think if you are not doing it.
So be generous now to the glory of God.
Yeah.
And look what you're, you know, imagine what God may do with the money that you give to the work of the Lord in whatever shape or form that looks like.
So it's a bit of a huge box to open talking about money. I feel like we've really only just scratched the surface and this has been a long chat. There's just so many different complexities and aspects and things to think about and questions that we have. But hopefully we've got a few big overarching principles that we can think about. Like we've had some warnings about the danger of money, the desire for control, security, or for pleasure and a lifestyle now or status. But we've also had the flip side of what does it look like to be godly with our money? Money's not evil in and of itself. It's how we use it and our desires around it that are the problem. And so we should be seeking to be godly, to provide for ourselves and those who depend on us, and to be generous because God has given us our money. It's from God. We can't really hold on to it. We can't take it with us. You know, Jesus' parables, you know, you can't store up treasures on earth because they're going to all be faded away at some point. You can't take them into heaven.
Yep.
And so being generous in what we have now and not trying to hoard things. And it's a really beautiful example of what it means to be transformed by God, to be generous with what you have, because you don't necessarily want to if you just have money. Like, it's very tempting.
Yeah. It's what it's like to be godly, you know, godlike. God has been so generous to us in giving us his son, who forsook all the, you know, the metaphorical riches of heaven to be poor human for our sake.
Yeah.
And so if God's so generous to give us his son, then surely we can give us of some of the money and wealth that he's given us as a gift anyway, for the help of others and for the forwarding of his kingdom. But no, do check out the book Money Counts by Graham Bainan. Pretty short, but really practical. That's a really helpful way to, if you want to think about this more deeply, would be really good for a lot of people.
Yeah. All right, now we are returning to trivia. Speaking of poverty and riches, Anton, what are the scores?
Okay, our blank space scores are Anton on 10, Simon on 6.
I had a little bit of a comeback next week, so So we'll see. Hopefully that continues.
It may well. Let's find out right now. We're in people's category. Your question, Simon: who cut off the high priest's servant's ear?
That was Peter.
Yeah, easy. Well done.
Yay.
The comeback continues.
Yes. Who planned to kill Lazarus?
Someone planned to kill Lazarus?
Yeah, I know. I read that and I was like, wait, what?
So there's a Lazarus story in John 11 where Jesus raises him from the dead. And then there was a parable of Lazarus. So either it's that rich guy in the parable, or is it Jesus by letting him die? I feel like that's strong language. Can I be as vague as the rich man in the parable?
It's vaguely incorrect. The chief priests.
Really?
Yeah, I'm looking this up.
I never knew that.
I think maybe they were like, he can't do this. It's proof that he's powerful. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, for on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him.
There you go. Luke something? No.
John 12:10.
Huh. How about that?
Fascinating.
Never knew that at all. Well, that's probably why I didn't get that right. Who killed, not a killing, who killed Job's camels and servants who were caring for them?
Oh, so it's like an invading, look, it's a guess, Midianites.
You're on the right track. It was an invading nation. It's the Chaldeans. Who I think became the Babylonians later.
Yeah, there we are. Name the two sisters of Lazarus.
Oh, no. My first thought, is it Mary and Martha? I feel like that can't be right, but who else would they be? Let's lock that in.
You are correct.
Yes.
I was mentally thinking, if you got one of them right, would we give you a half point? We haven't done half points.
Well.
There we are.
Margin is sustained.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I was really hoping I'd get closer. If only I knew the Chaldeans. It wasn't that long ago I read Job, but anyway.
Oh, well. 11-7 is 11-7.
So who knows what happens when we finish off trivia?
Yeah, fun time.
Still close. All right, well, that draws an end to our final regular episode of the season. Wow. Anton is happy that I said regular, so we haven't had an argument about how we define an episode.
Yes.
We've avoided that.
That's a shame.
Yeah, and that's the end of our series on living for God. That's the end of our topics. We've gone through a whole lot of things: porn, decision making, work, rest, friendship, singleness, church, gifts, emotions, money. That's a lot of topics.
That's a lot of topics. And yeah, feel free to go back and listen, or if you missed one, go back on the...
They're on the internet forever now, so...
Hooray.
Hopefully they were really helpful in how to think about how you live for God. We are doing one more episode this season, though. Yeah. It's not a regular episode. We're doing a special end of season extravaganza. Last time we did a live episode.
Don't promise too much.
No, I'll promise it's a special episode.
It is special. It is special, yes.
We're not doing a live episode this time. We're doing kind of a bonus ep where we're going to have a chat with some of our listeners about the season. We'll have our final special round of trivia. We may even get Josh in to help arbitrate like we did in the live show.
He was very very
he was helpful.
Yeah.
And have a little chat to wrap up the season. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be fun. So look out for that. It'll be coming out next week. And enjoy the end of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. So join us for church 6:45 each Sunday at ccsi.online. And subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss that bonus episode coming.
Yeah. Or you just always then have them on your device. If you haven't subscribed before, there's 21 episodes that you can listen to already, which is a decent amount of episodes.
Yeah.
I think they're good. People say they're good. So subscribe.
Find it out for yourself. See you next time.